Well, there is no easy segue from that to my topic, so I'm just going to say it's completely different and go from there. I'd like to obviously thank all the co-authors and the principal investigators of the Wise Woman study, and also, unfortunately, and I apologize, I'd like to thank the Centers for Disease Control for funding of this project. I have no relationships. I'm a doctoral student. I have no money. As I'm very well aware that most of you in this room, our obesity rates continue to rise, and the medical expenses associated with overweight and obesity accounted for 9% of our total U.S. medical expenditures. Based on these two overriding facts in our society, it brought interest to me as a last year that why aren't we looking at understanding what interventions are doing to help women lose weight, but are they cost-effective? We have scarce public health resources, and everyone can say, well, I did this intervention, and someone lost 10 pounds, or their heart rate improved. But in order to really disseminate those interventions on a broad reach, we need to understand how cost-effective they are. And as many public health funds are being cut, this is a timely issue. So, with that being said, unfortunately, few studies, especially interventions, really assess the cost-effectiveness of their programs, and it's something that I highly recommend as researchers and public health practitioners that we start to do. Additionally, I think this cost-effectiveness analysis is a promising tool for really understanding where our public health resources can go, given that we are, you know, given a dollar, right, to do everything we need to do. We need to understand where best to put our money. So where did this analysis come from? There was a weight-wise intervention, and women were 40 to 64 years old, BMI, and under or uninsured, and they had to be eligible to participate in the intervention. They had to be eligible with the breast cervical cancer program, and they had to sign up for Wise Women. Exclusion were breastfeeding, pregnant, and any medical contraindications for physical activity, which would be a recent heart attack, stroke, or if they recently lost weight of more than 20 pounds or had gastric bypass surgery. The weight loss approach for WeightWise is the adaptation of the diabetes prevention program and the Premier, which we adapted for low-income women with low literacy needs. Obviously, we talked about a moderate reduction in calories and an increase in moderate intensity physical activity. Pretty standard. The program, and the reason I want to go over the details is that when people want to say, well, what costs are involved, and this is why I'm talking about the details of the actual intervention. It was 16 weekly group sessions that were 2 hours each, and most people are alarmed at the intensity of the program, but we felt that this was needed given the low-income population that we were dealing with. The session components consisted of group sharing and problem solving. We would talk about a weight control topic and really focused a lot on behavior change. Additionally, we did a Move It, so every other session we would do a physical activity type of activity, and then the opposite session we would do a Taste It. So we would have women tasting hummus or doing egg salad sandwiches, but with reduced fat recipes. As you can see, the baseline characteristics, there was no difference between the intervention and control group. We had a higher, relatively high minority population, low educational achievement, and a high percentage of unemployment. And at baseline, there was a similar percentage between the overweight and obese. About 20% were overweight, 67% were obese. We had close to 15% being diabetic. The mean total cholesterol, though, was around 200, and the mean HDL was around 53. And again, no significant differences between the groups. So in order to measure the effectiveness and the cost of the intervention, we look at two primary outcome measures. One is obesity, which obviously was weight change. This was a weight loss intervention. So what's our main outcome is weight change. And the second was a reduction in coronary heart disease risk. So again, we had collected cholesterol, HDL, total cholesterol, LDL, glucose, and so we wanted to look at, was there a change in reduction in coronary heart disease risk? So in order to do that, we then collected the direct costs of conducting a weight loss intervention. Those included two components. One is your personnel cost, So everything involved was staff training, time spent in groups, the time spent that the facilitator was in the groups, reminder phone calls. And then the other main component was program material. So what were the handouts that we gave? What were the incentives and the equipment? We did not include indirect costs, which would be participant time. So let's say the participant, you know, has a job and they get paid $5.50 an hour, and they were in our session for 2 hours. We did not include the time they spent in our session. And there's two reasons for that. Number one is most studies that I found didn't collect indirect costs. So in order to make our study comparable, I wanted to obviously not include indirect costs. And number two, the bigger reason is that this purpose is for other health, you know, county health departments and other programs to be able to understand how much it would cost them to conduct the program. This isn't necessarily for a participant to understand what it would cost for themselves individually. The effectiveness measures are then, basically what I've mentioned is that the mean changes in weight, your blood pressure, total cholesterol, and then this is the part that gets a little tricky. So if there's an economist in the room, they can jump up. I do not claim to be one. But what I had to calculate was a change in your 10-year probability of developing coronary heart disease. And then secondly, a change in your 10-year probability of losing a life year from being overweight, obese, or morbidly obese. So for example, if I'm 35 years old and my life expectancy is 80, but I'm overweight, I'll probably lose a life year by being overweight, so I'll only live to be 79 years old. And that's how you kind of explain losing a life year. Now, what I used for the change in the 10-year probability of coronary heart disease is a very standard calculation by Anderson. And for the change in the 10-year probability of losing a life year from being overweight is the Fontaine, which has recently been published in JAMA a couple years ago. The one thing you might want to note is that in the CHD calculations, they don't include a BMI. So CHD looks at systolic blood pressure, HDL, total cholesterol, smoking, and diabetic status, but it does not include a BMI. So even more of a reason to calculate a change in losing a life year just from being overweight. And again, there's limitations with that, which I will be happy to talk about ad nauseum with you. So after we've determined a 10-year risk of CHD, we then have to calculate life years gained due to a reduction in CHD risk and due to a reduction in losing a life year from obesity. These calculations have been, I've taken from Eric Finkelstein, who's at RTI, and he's used that method from the Wonderling group. And then again, I used what Fontaine had done in JAMA. So to really explain, to calculate an excess year's life loss, we applied the previously calculated excess YLL from women to our study population. Since we don't have mortality data, our women, and luckily, are still alive. And so ideally what you'd like to do is follow the women and see if their life expectancy was 80, but they died at 78, they lost 2 life years. But since our women are still alive, I couldn't do that. And so therefore, I took Fontaine's population and applied it to my study sample. Again, there's a limitation with that, but my women are alive. There's nothing I can do. at least we can laugh about that in a good way. This approach for all of these accounts for race, sex, and smoking status. After you have calculated your life years gain, the next step is to say, well, what's the cost effectiveness ratio? This is simply the cost of the intervention, so all those program and personnel costs divided by your life years gained, whether through a reduction in your CHD risk or through losing weight, so it would be a reduction in obesity. It's simply not enough to look at cost effectiveness. Someone could argue that, yes, the women lost weight, but what if they gained all the weight back? Would your program still be cost effective? So in order to test those, we do a sensitivity analysis. In scenario 1, women return to their pre-intervention weight after 1 year. In scenario 2, women maintain half of their weight loss after 1 year. So if you lost 10 pounds, you only regain back 5 of those pounds. And for CHD, women return to their original values of total cholesterol, HDL, and blood pressure. And the reason for scenario 1, I only tested one scenario in CHD risk, is because in the next slide you'll see we didn't find a significant result in CHD risk reduction from this intervention. So, what did I find? cost of the intervention was about close to $14,000, but the cost per participant was only $190. And if you compare that to a commercial program, this is definitely less expensive. Where did the cost come from? Our personnel costs, which I've already mentioned, and the biggest part was the time the facilitator spent in group session. And the caveat here is that we offered these group sessions 3 times per week. So perhaps one area to, and an opportunity to cut costs would be don't offer it 3 times per week, only offer it once a week. And as far as program costs, the biggest cost was incentives. And that's simply because we had the most women and we were offering incentives each week. Even though these were extremely affordable, these were $1, $2 incentives, it adds up week after week, women after women. And so that's what we found to be our largest cost. So as far as effectiveness measures, we find that the cheapest was the total cholesterol, so the cost per the unit change. So we did see even though we didn't see a significant change in CHD risk reduction overall, we did see a significant change in blood pressure change in HDL. As you can see, the cheapest was the total cholesterol. That was the most least expensive to change. And weight was obviously the most expensive to change. Like I said, we found significant differences in blood pressure, weight, BMI, and we found, luckily, which I was excited, years of life lost from obesity. And what this translates to is about women who lost weight gained about a third of a year. So just by participating in a 16-week weight loss intervention, they gained about a third of a year. Crudely, this is crudely. Now on to our cost effectiveness of results. So if you remember, we calculated those, gaining a life year, and how did that come out? Well, we found that the cost was about $1,400 for a discounted life year. So it cost us $1,400 to have a woman gain about a life year. For CHD, it was definitely more expensive. It was $4,700. Now, if you recall from the sensitivity analysis in scenario one, women return to regain all of their weight. Even with regaining all of their weight, the cost-effectiveness is still considered effective based on the threshold of $35,000 to $50,000 per life year gained. That standard is the WHO, World Health Organization standard, and that's the cut point they use to say if the intervention or the program is less than that amount, it's deemed cost-effective. So based on that threshold, we see that if women regain all their weight, it's still cost effective. And based on our weight loss maintenance results, in scenario two, where women only regain about half of their weight, it's still extremely cost effective at about $3,000. With CHD, that's another story. As I said to you, number one, we didn't see a significant change in the CHD risk profile. And if women return to their pre-intervention levels of cholesterol and blood pressure, it really isn't cost-effective. So in conclusion, WeightWise is a cost-effective based on the short-term outcomes. We have not followed these women for longer than 12 months, so this is a relatively short-term outcome. Our sensitivity analysis demonstrates that in either scenario for obesity, we find that our program is cost-effective. And more importantly, that I feel that this tool is extremely useful to assist with intervention comparison for public health practitioners and for outreach to stakeholders in determining how to allocate our resources. Thank you. We have time for questions. Yes, Eric Finkelstein has quite a few publications on that.
Did you measure their physical activity levels post-intervention?
With accelerometer, yes. We have both self-report and objective measures. We have accelerometer data and we have self-report data, and there were no significant differences. But this study, we've gotten funding through the CDC to disseminate this study in 6 health departments, and one of the flaws of the pilot study was the way we used the accelerometer data. I'm sorry, the method of collection for the accelerometer. So in our current study, we will have much better, more accurate physical activity measurements.
Did you exclude diabetics?
No. 15% were diabetic in our sample. It's okay.
Because your estimate of life years gained were just related to obesity, did that publication consider diabetes too as a complication of obesity?
Right, exactly. Yep. And so the CHD risk accounts for diabetic status, as does the obesity formula.
It does.
Yes, both do.
Mm-hmm. You indicated you gave the participants weekly incentives. The incentives were for what purpose?
Attendance.
So all they had to do was show up to a session and they got the prize.
Yes, they did. And they were very small and they were typically not food related, so they were a packet of seeds to plant in the garden. A measuring cup. It was those kind of things. Thanks.
Okay, and lastly we have Namratha Swamy, who is standing in for Rebecca Ledsky.